Dear Dr. Day, I've just been diagnosed with cancer. I don't want chemotherapy or radiation because I don't want to destroy my immune system. It just doesn't make sense to think I can get well by making myself so deathly ill. But as I look at all the types of alternative medicine therapies, I have become so confused. Can you please help me sort it all out?
When I developed cancer, I was overwhelmed, too, with all the different types of therapy that were available. I started off with one plan, but when I began getting worse, I just kept trying one therapy after another, not really understanding completely what I was doing, and all the time wondering, how will I ever figure this out? How will I ever understand what I need to know to get well? I tried over 40 different types of alternative therapies before I finally understood, from extensive reading and researching and praying for wisdom from God, what actually causes cancer. When you understand what causes cancer, then you can identify the plan necessary to get well. Now, most books are just encyclopedias of all the different alternative therapies as though they were all equally effective, but they're not. On my video, Cancer Doesn't Scare Me Anymore, I discuss some of these therapies and their successes, showing that many alternatives have been quite effective in the past, so effective that organized medicine has continually tried to destroy them. But now, more people have cancer, and they're sicker than they were 50 years ago because of the increased stress and the fast food and the processed food, and of course the inactivity and all the problems of our fast-paced life. So alternative therapies that worked 50 years ago don't work as well anymore. Since I've personally tried so many of them and have diligently studied the rest, I'm going to share my information with you so you don't have to endure the same desperate struggle I did. I'm Dr. Lorraine Day. Let me give you my credentials. I'm an orthopedic trauma surgeon. For 15 years, I was on the faculty of the University of California, San Francisco Medical School, as associate professor and vice chairman of the Department of Orthopedic Surgery. I was also chief of orthopedic surgery at San Francisco General Hospital. I've spent my entire career in the heart of mainstream medicine. But even with all this education and experience, doctors don't learn anything about true healing. But I'm not only a physician, I was also a patient. Over 7 years ago, I developed breast cancer. The exact diagnosis was invasive ductal adenocarcinoma of the breast, biopsy proven at both a university medical center and at a major cancer hospital. The tumor was small at first, about half the size of an almond. But because it was beginning to bother me, I had it removed. The diagnosis was cancer, and it had already spread into the muscles of my chest wall. But I refused chemotherapy and radiation because of their destructive side effects, and I refused mastectomy. I made some major changes in my diet, but I didn't understand that there was more to getting well than just dietary changes. And after a time, my tumor returned. It was small at first, about the size of a marble. And it stayed that way for a number of months while I was frantically trying various alternative therapies. But then suddenly it grew from the size of a marble to the size of a large grapefruit in less than 3 weeks. Here's a side view. That's tumor. And here's another view showing the massive size of the tumor. I was in serious trouble. In fact, eventually I became essentially bedridden for 6 months. And at one point, I was not expected to live through the night. But now, I'm alive and well and cancer-free, and it's been a full 7 years since my tumor first appeared. No chemo, no radiation, no mastectomy. In addition to this gigantic tumor, I had symptoms of many other diseases simultaneously with my cancer. I developed the pill-rolling tremor of Parkinson's. I had some symptoms of multiple sclerosis, including numbness from my knee down on my left leg and lack of control of my left leg. And I had feelings that someone was constantly grabbing my left arm. I had symptoms of Raynaud's phenomena, where my fingertips would be numb and tingly. I developed severe allergies to all except three foods when I would eat any foods other than those three. I would collapse and have to be on oxygen. I also developed severe, overwhelming anxiety and depression. But as I started following this specific 10-step, totally natural health plan that eventually got me well from cancer, all my other symptoms slowly began to disappear. So it was apparent that the same factors that were causing my cancer were also causing my severe anxiety, my Parkinson's symptoms, my allergies, and all my other symptoms. From the time I got the entire plan together and began implementing it with 100% commitment, it only took 8 months for my cancer to reverse itself. Now, I had a portion of the tumor removed for relief from the severe pain, but the cancer still persisted all through my chest wall muscles and the nodes under my arm and above my clavicle. All that cancer was left in place, and I was sent home to die. But within 8 months of following the 10-step health plan, all the cancer was gone. It went away slowly, one day at a time. Then it took another 10 months for me to regain my strength. So within 18 months, I was totally well. Since I've been to death's door and I personally tried over 40 different types of alternative therapies before I found the one plan that has all the ingredients for success, the one plan that got me well and has gotten thousands of others well from cancer and many other diseases, I'll try my best to lead you through the maze of alternative medicine and show you what works, what doesn't, and why. Now, don't watch this video just as entertainment. We're going to cover a lot of territory, so get a pencil and paper and take notes as though you were going to take a test on what I tell you. You'll learn a lot more that way. And you may need to watch this video over and over again because I'll be discussing a lot of information. First, let me tell you about my car. I recently took my car to an auto mechanic. I told him my fan belt was squeaking, the first gear in my transmission was slipping, the check engine warning light was flashing on my dashboard, and there was a terrible knock in my engine. He said, leave it in his shop and he would look it over. When I called back and asked what was wrong with my car, he said it would cost me $800 to get it fixed. I gasped and said, well, what's wrong with it? He said, I don't know. You don't know? Well, how can you fix it if you don't know what's wrong with it? What did you do for the squeaking fan belt? I asked. I removed it, he said. But I can't drive the car without a fan belt. Oh, it'll work for a while, he said. Well, how about my first gear? I removed it, he said. You removed my first gear? It's okay, he said. You have second and third gears. It'll work for a while. Well, what about the check engine warning light on my dashboard? Oh, I cut the wires to that light. It won't bother you anymore. And how about the knock in my engine? Then he handed me some earplugs. I looked him straight in the eye and I said, you're not a mechanic. You're a doctor. You see, that's what we doctors do. We cover up the symptoms with drugs or remove the part. Now, you would never let an auto mechanic attempt to repair your car if he didn't first find out exactly what was wrong with it, would you? You expect better from your mechanic than to just remove the parts from your car that aren't working rather than fixing them, or to cover up the symptoms such as the knock in your engine by handing you a pair of earplugs. But think about it. That's exactly what we doctors are trained to do. If an organ in your body is not working and is causing you trouble, symptoms, we doctors do one of two things. We give you drugs to cover up the symptoms, or if that doesn't work, we just take out the organ or part by surgery. We never fix the problem. Why? Because doctors don't understand the underlying causes for nearly all disease. We're never taught what causes cancer, because even the so-called experts admit they don't know what causes cancer. Medical textbooks admit that for 80 to 90% of all diseases, the cause is unknown. So if doctors don't know the cause for your disease, why would you let them give you treatments such as drugs or surgery that can kill you or damage your body severely when they don't understand what's causing your problem? If your mechanic does a bad job on your repairs, you can at least buy a new car. But you'll let a doctor who admits he or she doesn't know the cause of your problem work on your body, your life, and that's the only body you've got. In order to really fix anything, you must have a clear understanding of what's causing the problem. Now, let's talk about cancer. The only treatment an orthodox medical doctor is taught to give you for cancer is chemotherapy, radiation, or surgery. But cancer is not caused by a deficiency of chemotherapy, nor is it caused by a deficiency of radiation. Just as headaches are not caused by a deficiency of aspirin, and stomach upsets are not caused by a deficiency of antacids, and joint pains are not caused by a deficiency of anti-inflammatory drugs. All of those treatments just cover up the symptoms while the underlying problem, the disease, is still there. Now, it's important to understand that chemotherapy is a poisonous drug. Chemotherapy and radiation both destroy your immune system. That's the only system in your body that can get you well. In fact, both chemotherapy and radiation actually cause cancer. There are many articles in the medical literature documenting this, and every doctor knows that very well. The point is that the treatment we doctors give often kills you. But you can reverse cancer and actually get well by addressing the underlying cause of the cancer. So, how about cutting out the cancer? Even if you have the cancer cut out or the organ removed by surgery, you still have left in your body all of the factors that allowed your cancer to develop in the first place. Unless you change all of those factors, the cancer will return, either in the same organ or in another organ, or you will develop another type of disease. And if you cut out the mass or tumor, what are you going to use to follow your progress on rebuilding your immune system and eliminating your cancer? Now, I'm not telling you that you shouldn't have it removed. That decision is up to you. I'm just suggesting that you evaluate all the options before you proceed. Now, how about removing the lymph nodes? The lymph nodes are part of your immune system. If they have cancer in them, that means they're doing their job. They are the little guards at the gate whose job it is to keep the cancer from spreading. When they're removed, then the barriers to the spread of cancer are decreased, and the cancer can spread more rapidly. So, what does cause cancer? Is cancer inherited? Does cancer run in families? Even if your great-grandmother, your grandmother, and your mother had breast cancer or some other kind of cancer, that doesn't mean it's genetic. Oh, it's passed down in families, all right, but not necessarily in the genes. Your great-grandmother teaches your grandmother how to eat, live, and handle stress. And your grandmother teaches your mother, and your mother teaches you. Now, a very tiny percentage of cancer is genetic, but it's hardly worth mentioning. Parents teach their children how to eat and how to handle stress, either directly or by example. They teach them good ways to eat and handle stress, or they teach them bad ways to eat and bad ways to handle stress. This is the way that disease, including cancer, is handed down from generation to generation, not in the genes, except in very, very rare cases, but in the ways we're taught to eat and handle or not handle life stresses. Well, how about viruses causing cancer? That's a popular theory now among medical experts. Sounds logical, doesn't it? Since everyone agrees that germs cause disease, but do they? When a doctor looks under the microscope and sees germs, such as bacteria or viruses, in contact with dead or diseased tissues, our response is, voila, this germ, this bacteria or virus, is actually causing the disease. So we conclude that in order to get rid of the disease, we must destroy the germs with antibiotics or other drugs, all with harmful side effects. So we doctors prescribe the drugs, and guess what? The symptoms of the disease stop like magic, because the antibiotics do indeed, in many instances, kill off the bacteria. And the patient feels better, at least for a time. But just because germs, viruses, and bacteria are in contact with dead and dying cells and tissue, and just because the patient feels better when the germs are killed off, doesn't necessarily mean that the germs are actually causing the disease. Let me ask you, if bacteria and viruses and flies and other insects are on a pile of dead and decaying garbage, did the bacteria and the viruses and the flies cause the pile of garbage? No. The scraps of vegetables started decaying because they were separated from their life force, the tree or the ground, when they were picked. The garbage, the decaying matter, attracted the flies and the bacteria and the viruses as the cleanup crew. If you kill off the bacteria and viruses and flies and other insects and animal scavengers whose job in nature is to clean up the garbage, will the garbage go away by itself? Of course not. Over time, the flies and other insects, together with the bacteria and viruses and maybe other animal scavengers, will completely eat up that pile of garbage. Destroying the cleanup crew will only allow the pile of decaying garbage to exist much longer. God has created an ingenious system of keeping the world clean. If there's a dead animal in the road, here come the insects and the scavenger animals and maybe even vultures, the scavengers of the air, to eat up the decaying flesh of the animal. Nature's cleanup crew is always available and ready to go. In the ocean, crabs and lobsters and other ocean scavengers eat up the dead fish and the decaying sea creatures. The dead creatures attract the cleanup crew. Land scavengers eat up dead animals to keep the environment clean. And those scavengers don't eat live, healthy animals, only dead, rotting flesh. In every instance, the dead flesh attracts the scavenger cleanup crew, the vultures or insects and viruses and bacteria. These viruses and bacteria never cause the dead flesh. It's the same on the tissue level. For hundreds of years in medicine, maggots were used to clean up infected wounds. The maggots don't cause the problem. They just clean up the dead and decaying tissue in the wound, leaving it perfectly clean and ready for healing. And they never touch healthy tissue. They can tell the precise difference between healthy and unhealthy tissue. They only eat up the dead part. That's what all scavengers do. So, if germs don't cause garbage, they're only there to clean up the mess, then what are they doing in our body? The idea that germs actually cause disease, which is known as the germ theory, was promoted by a French physician, Louis Pasteur, the pasteurization of milk, Pasteur, way back in the 1800s, and was embraced and totally accepted by all of orthodox medicine since that time, even till today. Pasteur said the germ is everything, and the milieu, or the immune system of the body, is nothing. Meaning, the condition of your immune system doesn't matter. It only matters, he said, if you come in contact with the germ, and then you're absolutely destined to get the disease. But Pasteur's contemporary, named Antoine Beauchamp, a physician and expert in his own right, he was professor of biochemistry and dean of the faculty of medicine at a very prestigious university medical school in France, he strongly disagreed. Beauchamp said, germs don't cause disease. Disease is a result of the deterioration of the body's defense mechanisms, the immune system, and the germs come in to clean up the dead tissue and the dead cells. Beauchamp said that the milieu, the immune system, is everything, and the germ is nothing. If your immune system is working properly, the germs will not cause disease. But Pasteur worked for the government, so then, as now, he received more media coverage and unwavering support even in his error. And the medical establishment has been embracing his theory ever since. But if the theory is wrong, it will never lead to success in finding cures for diseases. That's the main reason the war on cancer has been a miserable failure. Beauchamp had developed in his own laboratory a very powerful microscope. He could see in the blood of healthy people tiny forms much smaller than cells and even smaller than bacteria that he named microzymas. He discovered these tiny bodies are pleomorphic. That means that they can change from one shape or form into another shape or form. These same tiny bodies that can change form depending on the condition of the person's immune system were also documented by an extraordinary scientist inventor named Royal Rife, who about 60 years ago built possibly the world's greatest microscope, a light microscope with magnification and resolution so superior that it was possible to study live bacteria and viruses, something even present-day scientists cannot do. He observed and photographed bacteria that were pleomorphic, just as Beauchamp had discovered. They could change their form. A bacteria could actually become a virus or a fungus. The ability of these tiny bodies to turn into bacteria and viruses and fungi was again confirmed by Dr. Virginia Livingston, a physician, a professor at Rutgers University, and an outstanding cancer researcher who for years directed her own cancer clinic in San Diego. This tiny body, the microzyma, as named by Beauchamp, was renamed and more clearly defined by Dr. Gaston Naissons, a brilliant chemist and physicist now living and working in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, who studied at the same university in France where over 100 years before Antoine Beauchamp had taught. Naissons built a super specialized microscope for studying these tiny living organisms, which he named somatids. Over years of careful microscopic observation and laboratory experimentation, Naissons went on to discover that if and when the immune system of an animal or a human being becomes weakened or destabilized, the normal three-stage cycle of the somatid goes through 13 additional successive growth stages to make up a total of 16 separate forms, each form evolving into the next. All of these forms have been revealed clearly and in detail by motion pictures and by still photography under Naissons' microscope. If a person is healthy with a properly functioning immune system, he will have floating free in his blood numerous somatids in their most basic natural form. However, when the immune system becomes suppressed from improper nutrition, lack of sleep, stress, radiation, chemotherapy, or other powerful drugs, or any other assault to the body, the somatids begin a cycle of change into one of 13 different additional forms. The somatids actually become bacteria in rod forms or spore forms, or they may progress into yeast or mycelial forms, a type of fungus. These somatids change into the type of organism that the body needs to clean up the dead or dying cells produced by the stress or other assault on the body. But when they clean up the dead and dying cells, the detoxification process produces symptoms. This is what we doctors call disease. So you see, we can actually produce bacteria, viruses, or yeast in our own body just by not taking care of our immune system properly. Our body has this built-in fantastic mechanism to produce just the right organism to clean up the mess we have caused in our own cells, tissues, and organs. Just think about it. If you have Epstein-Barr virus or Candida, hepatitis, herpes, or other organisms, the way to get rid of them is not to take powerful antibiotics or other drugs to destroy them, but to rebuild your immune system by totally natural methods so you will have no dead or dying tissue in your body for these organisms to feed on. And by the way, it's impossible to rebuild the immune system using drug medications. All drugs have side effects. The immune system can only be rebuilt by totally natural methods. So you can see all these organisms, the bacteria and the viruses and the yeast and the fungi, can arise within our body. Disease doesn't have to come from without. So it's clear that a person does not have to catch a disease. We can produce it within ourselves. In the mid-1800s, the famous nurse Florence Nightingale witnessed and wrote about diseases appearing in people in isolated places where no one could possibly have caught the disease from someone else. She also documented that one disease, with worsening of the patient's immune system, could turn into another disease. She concluded that there are not specific isolated diseases, only disease conditions. By the way, she was one of the researchers who had completely refuted the germ theory, the notion that germs cause disease, years before Pasteur had even proposed it. So, if germs don't cause disease, then viruses can't be the cause of cancer. The viruses are there as the cleanup crew. If we kill off all these organisms that are there trying to clean up the mess in our body, we may feel better for a time. But the mass of dead and dying cells and tissue is still there and will progressively, over time, continue to get worse. Thus, we set the stage for a more deadly disease. So the cause of cancer is not viruses, and we've already seen that the cause is rarely genetic. So what about the ozone hole and the environmental pollution? Well, they may play a tiny role in the cause of cancer. But just think, I and many others that I know have gotten well from cancer by natural methods, even though the ozone hole and the environmental pollution haven't changed. In fact, they may have gotten worse. This shows they have very little to do with the problem. So what does cause cancer? The answer has been known for well over 100 years. Ellen White, a brilliant, godly woman, a health reformer, and the most prolific woman author in America, penned the answer in the 1800s in a book called Ministry of Healing. Disease is an effort of nature to free the system from conditions that result from a violation of the laws of health. Let me repeat that. Disease is an effort of nature to free the system from the conditions that result from a violation of the laws of health. In other words, all disease is a direct result of violating the natural laws of health. So what are the laws of health? They are proper healthful nutrition, natural nutrition, regular exercise, drinking 10 glasses of water every day, daily sunlight, abstinence from harmful substances including alcohol, tobacco, caffeine, sugar, and all the chemicals that are in food, including preservatives and aspartame, NutraSweet, and MSG. Plus lots of fresh air every day, proper rest at the proper time of night, relief of stress by learning to trust God, an attitude of gratitude, that's thankfulness, and benevolence, doing things for others instead of always thinking of oneself. Sounds too simple, doesn't it? But all disease, including cancer, is caused by a violation of these 10 seemingly simple laws. The way I got well from severe advanced cancer, the way I reversed my cancer, was to institute these 10 natural health laws in my life with total 100% commitment. For decades, the cancer establishment has insisted that diet has nothing to do with cancer. If anyone pointed to a link between nutrition and cancer, they were ridiculed as a food faddist or a nut. But that attitude has changed somewhat in the last 20 years. In 1982, the National Academy of Sciences reversed its previous position and admitted that hundreds of medical studies show that the typical American diet, which is high in animal protein, fat, sugar, and processed food, was strongly associated with the majority of cancers. They actually urged drastic reductions in meat, poultry, egg, dairy, and refined carbohydrate intake to be replaced with a greater consumption of vegetables, fruits, and whole grains. In 1984, the American Cancer Society jumped on the bandwagon and issued similar dietary guidelines. And in 1990, they even began promoting a diet of fruits, grains, and vegetables as a means of primary cancer prevention. Yet many of these same institutions, while they admit that diet has a major role in preventing cancer, refuse to consider the fact that nutrition has any role at all in the treatment or reversal of cancer. But let's look at the facts. We now know that cancer is the result of a suppressed immune system. The medical establishment admits that we all get cancer cells in our body every day just by living. But if our immune system is working properly, it will destroy those cancer cells. If it's not working properly, then the cancer cells multiply, resulting in a lump or a tumor. So if your immune system is working properly, you can't get cancer. But if you eat the wrong diet, your immune system will be suppressed. It cannot work properly because it's not getting enough of the proper nutrition in the form of vitamins, minerals, and enzymes, which are in fresh fruit, grains, and vegetables, to make healthy cells. And it's being overloaded with toxins from the chemicals in processed food, fast food, the antibiotics and hormones and pesticides in meat and poultry, dairy products and eggs, and the gross contamination in fish from the polluted waters, plus the diseases that all the animals and the fish now have. Nearly all fish are caught within 200 miles offshore, where they dump the industrial waste and at times even human sewage. That's what the fish eat, and then you eat the fish. A diet high in flesh food and animal products such as meat, poultry, fish, dairy, and eggs increases the incidence of virtually every type of cancer. Meat, poultry, and fish are 40% fat and 40% protein. Both percentages are far too high for optimum health. And they contain no fiber and are practically devoid of vitamins and minerals. Also, meat contains chemical carcinogens, which are increased to even higher amounts by cooking. For instance, 2 pounds of charcoal broiled steak contains as much of the cancer-causing chemical benzopyrene as the smoke from 600 cigarettes. But establishment medicine says that now that your immune system is already suppressed, resulting in your cancer, changing your diet won't help you get well. You just need treatment, chemotherapy or radiation, which of course will suppress your immune system even more. That's like me, an orthopedic surgeon, telling you that if you have just suffered a crushed foot and leg from a bus running over you, that the treatment is to have the bus run over you again. It's just basic common sense to understand that in order to get well, you must stop and reverse the factors that got you sick in the first place. Medical studies have repeatedly shown that vegetarians have a much lower incidence of cancer, heart disease, arteriosclerosis, diabetes, obesity, and all other degenerative diseases than meat eaters do. So, the proper nutrition is critical for recovery from cancer and every other disease. Most anti-cancer diets share certain features. They are completely or largely vegetarian. They avoid or limit animal products, and they emphasize fresh vegetables, fruits, and whole grains. Yes, the soil is depleted of many nutrients, but the way to overcome that problem is not to use man-made supplements, but to avoid eating secondhand food. In other words, eat your grains and greens directly, like the cow does, rather than getting them secondhand by eating the cow. Do you really want to make your stomach a graveyard for dead animals? Also, eat organically grown foods. They're generally grown on better soil and are not treated with pesticides. And use an abundance of fresh homemade vegetable juices to get concentrated fresh vitamins, minerals, and enzymes in their natural combinations, such as in carrot juice and green leafy vegetable juice. Plus, you want to eat sprouts. You sprout your grain, beans, and seeds. Sprouting increases the vitamin, mineral, and enzyme content up to 600% more than unsprouted grains, beans, and seeds. And then eat at least 75% of your food raw. You see, raw food has within it most of the enzymes necessary for its own digestion. These precious food enzymes are destroyed by cooking, even by steaming of vegetables. And a deficiency of enzymes is a major contributor to all diseases, as well as causing premature aging. Cooked food is dead food. If you put a fresh raw potato in water, it will sprout. If you cook the potato first and then put it in water, it will turn into garbage because it's dead. You want to eat live, raw vegetables rather than mounds of cooked, dead food. Raw food is alive, but when you pick fruit or take vegetables from the ground, you disconnect them from their life source, and they slowly start to lose their nutrition. That's why it's even better to grow your own food than to buy produce at the store. Homegrown is fresher and more nutritious. When you eat homegrown sprouts, the sprout is still growing and increasing in nutrition until the moment you put it into your mouth. Human beings are the only animals that eat their food cooked, except, of course, for our pets. We give them cooked food as well. As a result, human beings and their domesticated pets are the only animals that suffer from chronic degenerative diseases such as cancer, arthritis, neurological diseases, and autoimmune diseases. Animals in the wild don't get those diseases. In the famous Pottinger cat study, two groups of cats were followed for several generations. One group of cats was fed cooked food, and the other group ate raw food. In the group of cats eating raw food, the females had large, healthy litters with no birth defects or stillborn babies, and all of the offspring had lustrous coats of fur. This occurred generation after generation. But in the cats fed cooked food, the offspring suffered from heart problems, hypothyroidism, infections of the kidney, liver, bladder, and reproductive organs, arthritis and inflammation of the joints, inflammation of the nervous system with paralysis and meningitis, and bone infections. And many baby kittens in the cooked food group were stillborn, and the ones that lived were unhealthy, too frail to nurse, and scrawny-looking with scruffy coats. The spontaneous abortion rate in female cats in the first generation of those fed cooked food was about 25%, and it rose to 70% in the second generation. Deliveries of these babies were generally difficult, with many females dying in labor. And by the third generation, the cats fed cooked food were so sickly that none survived beyond the 6th month of life, and the strain died out. In the cats fed cooked food, the females were much more irritable, and some ate their babies soon after they were born, whereas the males on cooked food became more docile than normal, and the sex interest of the males became slack or perverted. In essence, there was evidence for a role reversal, with the female cats becoming the aggressors and the male cats becoming passive, as well as evidence of increasing abnormal activities between the same sexes. Role reversal and sexual perversion occurred in the cats that ate cooked food. Such sexual deviations were not observed among the cats that ate raw food. In addition, when you destroy the natural enzymes present in raw food by cooking it, your body then must make the enzymes necessary to digest your food. It's estimated that the amount of energy necessary to make the enzymes to digest 3 meals of cooked food per day is equivalent to the amount of energy necessary to do 8 hours of hard labor. No wonder people are suffering from chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia and many other chronic diseases. Lack of enzymes results in disease and premature aging. Of course, human beings try to take a shortcut by eating most food cooked, and then they take enzyme pills to aid digestion. But most of the enzyme pills are made from animal sources and have all the potential contamination of the meat and animal products that we just discussed. Yes, there are pills made from vegetable enzymes, but why do we always try to bypass natural health? Just eat the bulk of your food raw, the way God made it, with the enzymes already in it. Also, there are many other nutrients in raw food that scientists don't even know about that are necessary for our health. Remember that man can't improve on nature. You can't improve on God. It takes literally years to develop cancer, probably 10 years at least, before symptoms or a lump appear. We give ourselves cancer and other diseases one day at a time by the way we eat and live. Of course, we don't mean to do it. We do it ignorantly because we don't know or don't want to know how really harmful our ways of living are. Fortunately, it takes a lot less time to get well than it took us to get sick. But even then, it took me a full 18 months of total dedication to the 10-step program to get well. One more important thing. Many people actually feel well when they receive their diagnosis of cancer. They don't feel sick. But this is a delusion. The immune system has to be severely suppressed for a person to develop cancer. Diseases, including cancer, don't just happen. They don't just suddenly drop from the sky and attack us. Virtually all disease, including cancer, is caused by a combination of three main factors: malnutrition, dehydration, and stress. Malnutrition, we eat a lot of calories, but not much nutrition. We eat a lot of flesh food and animal products, including dairy products, which are too high in fat and protein, with no fiber and very few vitamins and minerals. We eat empty calories in processed food that is high in fat, protein, and sugar, and chemical additives, but very low in vitamins, minerals, and enzymes, and fiber. And second is dehydration. The body is 75% water and the brain is 85% water. We lose 10 glasses of water from our body every day just by living. We lose it from perspiration, even when it's not hot, from breathing, our breath is moist, and from our body's need to take water from our cells to transfer it into the stomach to make digestive juices for each meal. All that water is lost through the kidneys and the colon. And caffeine, found in coffee and caffeinated soft drinks, is a diuretic. It takes more water out of your system than comes in with the drink. Water is a necessary architectural component of every cell in your body. If our cells are deficient in water, they can't function properly. Therefore, our body and our brain start to break down. And the third one is stress. The number one cause of death in America is anger. When we are stressed or angry, the stomach contracts and we can't digest our food properly, intestinal peristalsis stops so we can't get rid of our waste material, and instead we reabsorb those toxins, and our adrenal glands pour out harmful hormones into our body that suppress our immune system. In addition, stress is very dehydrating, so it depletes the body even more of its much-needed water. However, stress is relieved by proper rest, by exercise, by sunlight, by drinking water, by having a thankful attitude, and by trust in God. The bottom line is that there is no quick fix. We get sick one day at a time, and that's the way we must get well, the slow, hard way. It's the only way to truly rebuild and repair our bodies. The way I got well from severe, advanced, life-threatening cancer, the way I reversed my cancer, was to institute these 10 natural health laws in my life with total 100% commitment. And they are: number one, a totally vegetarian diet. 3 meals a day of fruit, grains, and vegetables in their most natural form. No meat, no poultry, fish, dairy, or eggs. Nothing processed, nothing in a box or can. 75 to 85% of my food raw. 13 fresh homemade juices taken in between meals. 1 fresh orange juice, 8 glasses of carrot juice and mixed with apple, and 4 glasses of green leafy vegetable juice mixed with apple. Each glass is 8 ounces. The second step, daily exercise. Now, if you're too sick, you can't do this until you're better. Exercise increases circulation. It increases oxygen to the body. It helps eliminate toxins. It lowers blood pressure, relieves depression. It increases the production of growth hormone and enhances the function of the immune system. Cancer can't live in a high oxygen environment. The third step is drinking water. Drinking water decreases blood pressure, decreases anxiety, improves the body's ability to handle stress. It cures ulcers. It decreases arthritic pain. And dehydration, the lack of water drinking, is one of the main causes of cancer. The fourth health law is daily sunlight, which enhances the immune system. It calms the nervous system, lowers the blood pressure. It increases tolerance to stress, and it decreases the size of internal cancerous tumors. Number five is temperance, or abstinence from harmful substances, including drugs, alcohol, tobacco, caffeine, sugar, chemical sweeteners such as NutraSweet, MSG, preservatives, and other chemicals in the food. Number six, lots of outdoor fresh air daily. Animal research studies have shown that cancerous tumors grow twice as fast if the animal is breathing indoor air compared to breathing outdoor air. Number seven, proper rest at the proper time of night. You can't repair a car while you're driving it. The only time the body can repair and regenerate itself is when you're sleeping. Number eight, trust in God. The most important relief for stress. Trust in the Creator of us, and everything that's in this natural health plan will bring peace like nothing else can. Number nine, an attitude of gratitude. Be thankful for what you have. I read a story once about a minister who was robbed on his way home. He later prayed and thanked God that, number one, it was the first time he'd ever been robbed. Number two, he wasn't killed. Number three, the robber didn't get much because the minister didn't have much. And four, that he was the one that was robbed and was not the man doing the robbing. And the tenth law of health is benevolence. Do something for someone who can't pay you back. Get outside yourself and start caring about others. Let go of your anger and grudge holding, because remember, anger is the number one cause of death in America. You can't get well from cancer or any other serious disease if you're harboring anger or holding grudges. Violation of these 10 laws of health causes disease, all disease. Reversing disease requires total compliance with these 10 laws of health. This health plan is given in great detail on my video, You Can't Improve on God. Now that we understand the factors that cause cancer and what we need to do to reverse those factors and get well, we can evaluate all these different alternative methods in light of this information. The first group we'll look at are the specific anti-cancer diets. The proper diet is critical for recovery. If you don't put the necessary raw materials into your body through the right diet, you can't possibly build healthy cells. If you eat food that's deficient in vitamins, minerals, and enzymes, you'll build cells that are fragile and sickly. You certainly know the difference between a car that's built with the best materials and the highest quality workmanship versus a car that's low budget and shoddily built with poor materials. And you would never put sand and rocks in the gas tank of your Rolls Royce. But that's essentially what most people do to their body. Instead of high quality fuel, they put in junk food and processed food, fast food, too much fat, too much protein, refined sugar, and virtually no building blocks of fresh produce with natural vitamins, minerals, and enzymes. The body ends up really being starved to death, even though it may become grossly obese. The average American family of four spends $1.74 per week for fresh produce. All five of these cancer diets are essentially vegetarian diets, meaning they contain no meat, no poultry, and little, if any, fish. Now, a vegan diet contains no animal products whatsoever, meaning that it contains no milk or dairy products, including no cheese, cottage cheese, yogurt, butter, or any other milk product, and it contains no eggs. All of these foods are high-protein foods, and cancer thrives on a high-protein diet, especially animal protein. All of these diets are far superior to the standard American diet. By the way, throughout this discussion, any time you see a red circle by a particular diet or alternative therapy, that means I personally tried it at some time along the way in my adventure in getting well. And I tried each one long enough to see if it had any effect on my cancer. The macrobiotic diet consists of 50% whole grains, such as brown rice, barley, millet, oats, and many other grains, and 5 to 10% soup made with vegetables or sea vegetables, grains, or beans, and miso, a fermented soy product. The diet also includes 20% to 30% of organically grown cooked vegetables, 5 to 10% cooked beans and sea vegetables such as nori, wakame, dulse, and kombu. And 1 to 3 times per week, they allow some fish. Now, various people have had success with all these different diets. However, I tried the macrobiotic diet and I did not get well. I'll first tell you the advantages for each one of these diets, and then I'll tell you what I feel are the disadvantages. Now, the advantages of the macrobiotic diet are that it is mainly vegetarian, although it does allow some fish, which I don't agree with. It's a diet high in complex natural carbohydrates, which is good, and the sea vegetables contain a lot of nutrients. However, the disadvantages are that the food is all cooked. And remember, when you cook food, you destroy all the enzymes in it. In my opinion, the diet contains too much protein. The rice, the fish, the soy, and the miso, and the beans are all protein. Fish is high in protein. It's high in fat and contamination and disease. All waters are highly contaminated now, and the fish contain PCBs, various heavy metals, lead, and petroleum hydrocarbons. Fish from mildly polluted waters can be as much as 1 million times more polluted than the water they came from. Because you see, the little fish eat the algae, which is contaminated, and then the bigger fish eat the little fish, and the larger fish eat those fish that are smaller than they are. So the fish that you eat are grossly contaminated. Fish now suffer from many major diseases. For example, 30% of the bullheads in Lake Erie were found to have liver cancer. One doesn't need to eat flesh food in order to get enough protein. All the protein one needs can be obtained from vegetarian sources, fruits, grains, and vegetables. The average American eats 132 grams of protein every day. That's 3 to 5 times more than anyone needs to be healthy. A diet high in protein, particularly animal protein, damages the kidneys, destroys the joints, and is one of the major causes of osteoporosis. Sea vegetables in the diet are rich in vitamins and minerals, but I found that I had to practically hold my nose to eat them because they smell awful. The miso soup in the macrobiotic diet is fermented soy. We might as well discuss soy products right here. First of all, soy products include the fermented products such as miso and tamari sauce, and the unfermented products such as tofu or bean curd. The Health Freedom News magazine in September 1995 and the New Life magazine in May of 1996 reported the following. The soybean contains large amounts of a number of harmful substances. First among them are potent enzyme inhibitors, which block the action of the enzyme trypsin, and other enzymes needed for protein digestion. These enzyme inhibitors are not completely deactivated during ordinary cooking and can produce serious gastric distress. They also reduce protein digestion and they promote chronic deficiencies in amino acid uptake. In test animals, diets high in trypsin inhibitors cause enlargement of the pancreas. The food industry touts soy products for their cancer-preventing properties. There are anti-cancer substances found in traditional fermented soybean products. However, in the non-fermented products, such as tofu and soy milk, these substances appear to have no anti-cancer effect. Soybeans are also reported to be high in phytic acid, which blocks the uptake of the essential minerals in the intestinal tract, including calcium, magnesium, iron, and especially zinc. Fermentation of these products, such as in miso, significantly reduces the phytic acid content, but not apparently in tofu. Chemicals and very high heat are used for the soybean extraction process, so we're dealing here with highly processed food, not food in its natural state. This macrobiotic diet is very low in fresh, raw vegetables and very high in protein. And cancer thrives on a high-protein diet. Next is Anne Fromm's diet from her book, The Cancer Battle Plan. The advantages are it's a totally vegan diet, meaning it contains no animal products, and it's all natural, no processed food. Her book recommends homemade vegetable juices and enemas for detoxification, exercise, maintaining morale and a positive attitude, and trust in God. The disadvantages of this program, in my opinion, are that she recommends a 14-day fast for cancer patients at the beginning of the therapy. I tried that and almost died because I detoxified too fast and became so sick that I couldn't eat, or eventually I couldn't even drink, and I came very close to death. Let's talk about fasting. A 3-day juice fast is probably okay for nearly anyone, but a fast longer than that can promote rapid detoxification, faster than the toxins can be mobilized out of the body, so the person can get very sick, as I did. Besides, a cancer patient is suffering from malnutrition, not a deficiency of calories necessarily, but a deficiency of proper nutrients. That person needs high-quality nutrition, not fasting. Even though fasting does detoxify the body, this can be done more slowly by eating natural food, particularly raw food, and drinking the vegetable juices in between meals. Anne Fromm's book also recommends lots of supplements in pill form. When I took lots of supplements, my tumor actually grew because supplements are not natural. Dr. Richard Schultz, a nationally known herbologist, investigated the source for the actual vitamins and minerals that the companies put in the pill supplements. He discovered that these people are not grinding up fresh veggies. He states, commercial-grade vitamin and mineral concentrates are synthesized by the big pharmaceutical and chemical industries from the same starting material that drugs are made from. That's coal tar, petroleum products, animal byproducts, animal waste, animal fecal matter, animal bones, ground up rocks, stone shells, and metal. They are then wholesaled out to the various nutrient manufacturers. The manufacturers are just mixing middlemen. Most of them don't even know how these various vitamins and minerals are made or from what. Nobody asks. Everybody just assumes a vitamin is a vitamin. After all, the United States Pharmacopeia states that if a product looks similar under a microscope or in analysis, that it is the same regardless of what it is made out of. All the vitamin B12 on the market, according to Dr. Schultz, is made from either ground-up toxic cow livers or activated sewage sludge. These cow livers are overloaded with steroids and antibiotics and the pesticides the cow assimilates while eating. The sewage sludge is just that, says Dr. Schultz, fecal matter. Also included in Anne Fromm's diet are pancreatic enzymes and desiccated or dried liver from animal sources, which I feel are far too dangerous now because animals are so contaminated and diseased. The biggest problem with this plan is that it is mainly a diet only. And even though the proper diet is critical for recovery, it's only 10% of the total plan necessary for you to get well. Freedom from stress, getting rid of anger and grudge holding, and complete trust in God were essential to my recovery. I couldn't get well until that happened. Another major problem is that Anne Fromm, who proposed this cancer battle plan, unfortunately died from her cancer. So again, even though the diet here is a good one, diet alone is not enough. Next is the Gerson plan. The advantages are that it's primarily a vegan diet of natural, unprocessed food, 3 meals a day, plus 12 fresh homemade vegetable juices and 1 fresh orange juice per day. These juices are taken mainly in between meals. The plan advocates enemas for detoxification, which helps eliminate waste. It's a rigorous plan and must be followed with 100% commitment, and it discourages the use of soy. The Gerson plan over the years has been very successful in healing many patients from cancer and other diseases. Now, the disadvantages are that dairy products are later introduced into the diet in the form of cottage cheese. Raw milk to make the cottage cheese is advocated, which I think is far too dangerous. The plan forbids water and states that all the fluid must be taken in the form of juices. I started out on this plan, but after 8 to 10 months of total commitment to the diet, my tumor returned. It eventually became obvious that I was far more dehydrated than 13 vegetable juices per day could correct. I needed water, lots of water, in addition to the juices. And of course, I needed to learn to give my stress to the Lord. I couldn't get well until I learned to do that. Virtually all the food in this plan is cooked, except for salads, and cooking destroys enzymes. However, admittedly, one gets huge amounts of enzymes in the fresh vegetable juices. Enemas are useful for detoxification, but I have a problem with coffee being used for the enemas. At first, I thought it was a good idea, because theoretically, the coffee is supposed to help detoxify the liver. As I stated on my video, cancer doesn't scare me anymore. The theory is that the coffee reaches the liver by a special series of vessels that bypass the systemic circulation, meaning the circulation that goes to the rest of the body. So you're not supposed to suffer the detrimental effects that caffeine has on the body when you drink it. I used to think that was true. However, I found when I was doing coffee enemas that I eventually became addicted to the caffeine and had to go through withdrawal headaches and generally feeling rotten. So clearly, the coffee does get into the systemic circulation and has the same detrimental effects as drinking coffee has. This plan also uses chemical potassium added to the juices. I'm against the use of chemicals. It also includes vitamin B12 injections, not the way the body is meant to get its vitamins. Vitamin B12 is available in alfalfa sprouts, barley, spinach, and other vegetables, and does not have to be taken by injection. Enzyme pills and liver injections, both from animal sources, are also included, which are far too dangerous in my opinion. And no salt is allowed. I believe a small amount of natural sea salt is necessary for health, particularly if you're drinking lots of water. The problem is, this is a one-dimensional program in that it is diet only. It's basically a pretty good diet and has been very effective with a number of people. But when I went on it, I couldn't get completely well. In fact, my tumor returned and grew. I needed to have all the 10 steps in God's natural health plan, especially more water, sunlight, fresh air, and the all-important proper attitude, including freedom from stress. In addition, reliance on God is not included in the Gerson program. Instead, New Age meditation is introduced. I believe that God is the healer, and He just does it through His natural health plan. New Age theory says that we can heal ourselves. All we have to do is look inside to our inner selves. The medical literature documents major differences between Eastern-type meditation versus Bible study combined with prayer. When you're practicing Eastern-type meditation, your brain is in alpha waves, the hypnotic waves. You're escaping from your problems rather than solving them. When a person who practices meditation is subsequently confronted with another stress, medical studies show that he reacts with more stress than if he had not been a meditator. On the other hand, Bible study and prayer promotes beta waves in the brain, the alert learning waves, where you're solving your problems rather than escaping from them. When this person is subsequently confronted with another stress, he reacts more calmly than if he had not been involved in Bible study and prayer. Next is the Hallelujah Acres plan. The advantages are it's totally vegan, no processed food, no meat, no dairy, no sugar, no preservatives, and 75% to 85% of the food is eaten raw. So you get the natural enzymes. For cancer patients, 8 glasses of carrot juice is recommended per day with the addition of barley green powder. The plan includes exercise, and the promoter of the plan, George Malkmus, is a Christian and believes in the health principles of the Bible. As far as the disadvantages, there are very few. Barley green powder is good, but fresh green leafy vegetable juice is, of course, better. This diet has been very successful in reversing many diseases, including cancer. But neither water nor salt are advocated, and I needed a more complete program with the advantages of sunlight, more water in addition to the juices, as I mentioned, and more emphasis on the spiritual aspects, because I found out that even though I was following the diet to a T, I was not getting well until I learned to truly give my stress to God and spend a lot of time with the Lord in Bible study and prayer. As I said, God is the healer. He just does it through His natural health plan. The other aspect that I differ with is that Hallelujah Acres diet recommends no breakfast or minimal breakfast, just lunch and dinner. I feel a healthy breakfast at the start of the day is important. Skipping the last meal of the day or just having fruit for supper allows the digestive tract to rest during the night. The body can then use all of its energy for restoring and repair, and sleep is improved as well. Next is Ann Wigmore's Totally Raw Diet, popularized by Edie Mae Hunsberger. Of all the diets, this is the best diet because it's exactly the way God made it. God did not create food cooked. It's all raw. However, some people cannot tolerate raw food if they're too sick. But as soon as the person gets better, he or she should move towards as much raw food as possible. This diet also advocates the use of wheatgrass juice, which contains close to 100 vitamins and minerals and other nutrients, including laetril, the 8 essential amino acids, a lot of oxygen, and abscisic acid, which shrinks tumors. But wheatgrass is very potent and may cause nausea, and you must drink it in very small doses, an ounce or two at a time. So you need to drink a lot of additional water to reverse your dehydration. That's a condition that all cancer patients have. Or, of course, you can use the fresh, raw, homemade vegetable juices in addition to the wheatgrass. So this is the optimum diet, all raw. But again, diet, though critical for recovery, is only 10% of the plan. All the rest of the plan, the sunlight, the exercise, water, fresh air, rest, trust in God, the proper attitude of thankfulness and benevolence, these are all necessary, in fact, mandatory for recovery from cancer or any other serious disease. Now, these are other diets that are not necessarily specific for cancer patients. However, people ask me about them all the time. The first is the rotation diet or elimination diet. This is advocated for patients with allergies. You start on a diet of just a few things or maybe even only one food that is mild, non-allergenic, and then you add one additional food every 5 days or so. The goal is to see if you can establish the specific foods that are causing your allergies. I tried this, but my system was such a mess, as is the system of most cancer patients, that I struggled for months and didn't make any progress. The real problem was that my entire immune system was so suppressed that everything bothered me. But as I slowly started to rebuild my immune system by the totally natural 10-step plan, eventually my allergies all went away. So rather than trying to figure out what you're allergic to, instead, just begin rebuilding your immune system and your allergies will eventually vanish. By the way, I discuss allergies and asthma specifically on my video, Diseases Don't Just Happen. One of the best known promoters of the high protein diet is Dr. Robert Atkins. He advocates a high protein, low carbohydrate diet and recommends supplement pills to make up for the deficiencies of vitamins and minerals resulting from the lack of fresh fruits and vegetables. These high-protein diets induce a state of ketosis, a condition of too much acid that is dangerous to the body. Toxic substances called ketones are formed as a result of overconsumption of proteins and fats and underconsumption of the natural complex carbohydrates needed to process the fats. A high-protein diet causes dehydration, which can cause dramatic but only temporary weight loss. Large amounts of water are lost from the body tissues as the body attempts to dilute the toxic byproducts of the excess protein that has been eaten. Weight loss can be rapid with the elimination of the water and the toxins it carries out of the body. However, when the diet is discontinued, the dieter gains weight rapidly. These high-protein diets can cause constipation due to the lack of fiber in the meat, poultry, and fish. They can also damage the liver, stress the heart, increase cholesterol, increase the triglyceride levels, that's the fat levels. They cause kidney damage from the ketosis. They can cause gout. They can wash the minerals and vitamins out of the body, leading to tiredness and bone damage, and an increase in cancer. And they also give you horrible bad breath. And a high animal protein diet is very deficient in vitamins, minerals, and enzymes. High protein diets are dangerous. Next is the Eat Right for Your Type diet. Eat Right for Your Type diet was advocated by Peter J. D'Amato. This program suggests that because there are four blood types in human beings, then there should be four different diets, one specific to each blood type. This concept is based on evolution. The theory is that those with type O blood type evolved from the hunter, and therefore they are meat eaters with a hearty digestive tract. The blood type A person supposedly is a vegetarian with a sense